everyone. This is David Douthat.
And this is Molly Douthat.
And welcome to More Than Hearing, a podcast to encourage preachers to incorporate multiple intelligence into sermons and worship leadership. Because there are plenty of ways to reach someone's soul.
Today's podcast will cover the lectionary selections for Year C, Easter 3. Two of the passages are very familiar: the conversion of Saul of Tarsus to Paul the Apostle, and Jesus' post-resurrection appearance to the disciples on the Sea of Tiberias. We found some new ways of looking at these old stories. Let's go see.
We have established this podcast based on Dr. Howard Gardner's theory of multiple intelligences. Dr. Gardner suggests that there are multiple ways to learn, process, remember, and understand our world. Each week we develop illustrations and special effects for the weekly readings of the Revised Common Lectionary that use various smarts based on Dr. Gardner's identified intelligences. We call them word smart, eye smart, math smart, body smart, music smart, nature smart, people smart, and self smart. You can read more about Dr. Gardner's work by clicking on the link at the top of our webpage.
As we read and reflect on the scripture passages for each week, we explore ways these intelligences can be utilized for a deeper appreciation of God's Word. We are in the middle of the Easter season, and while many people think the celebration has come and gone, Easter abides. The season itself stretches out for the 50 days between the Day of Resurrection and Pentecost, but truth be told, Easter is every day, because the Lord is risen.
He is risen indeed.
Anytime and in any way we can make use of the different smarts, we give people greater access to the Word of God, so that they can acquire it, process it, and internalize it in ways that make sense to them. Let's go get started.
First reading for the third week of Easter, Year C, is Acts 9, verses 1 through 6, and optionally verses 7 through 20. This is the story of Saul going on the road to Damascus on his way to arrest anyone who belonged to the Way, that is, Christians, so that he could bring them back to Jerusalem, and his encounter with the risen Christ, where the light flashes around him and Jesus says, "Hey, knock it off."
Essentially.
And that's the first six verses. Then if you want to add in the rest of the story, it includes the story of Ananias, the disciple in Damascus that the Lord sends to relieve Saul of his blindness and to break his fast. Ananias isn't too keen on the idea, but Jesus says, "Hey, no, it's cool. I've got this covered. Don't worry about it." And Saul...
I got this.
Saul ends up going out to preach on behalf of Jesus.
180 degrees in the other direction.
Woo. Yep. We have for you eye smart illustrations, and we have body smart illustration and special effects. We have people smart illustration and special effects, and self smart, a little bit of both there too. So, Molly, you want to start us off with eye smart?
Sure. Got to thinking about it and wondered how bright a light would you need to cause blindness, and went poking around, and about the best thing I could find was a Wikipedia article about flash blindness, and apparently the blindness of a bright light flashing at you is really only ever temporary. It's a light that bursts on your eyeballs and your receptors say, "Whoa!" And they kind of take some time off to recover, and you kind of get that dark spot that, you know, that it's in front of your eyes, but that's temporary. And they figured that that's really about the most that you would ever experience, unless somebody maliciously and viciously shines a light in your eyes and just essentially burns your retinas. And nobody really wants to do that. So apparently this particular kind of blindness that affected Saul was sort of a supernatural nature, because Jesus had something he needed to tell him.
Yeah. And we'll talk about that in a little bit, too. Mm-hmm. So another illustration for iSmart would be, when have you literally been stopped in your tracks, particularly by something you see, but maybe something else, like forgetting your keys and, you can turn around and off you go.
Or walking into a room and pondering the hereafter.
What am I here after?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe it's something a little more dramatic, like you're out for a walk and there's a strange big dog all of a sudden
growling at you. Yeah, that will stop you and make you go the other direction.
It will. It will. Or you come across something beautiful and
like the spring
and awesome,
flowers,
like
coming
flowers
up.
Or a sunset or
the
something,
stars.
Skyscape, what have you. So anyway, what has stopped you in your tracks?
For Body Smart, we have a variety of things, and there's a lot of overlap with PeopleSmart and iSmart as well. The iSmart, you know, being literally stopped in your tracks, your body comes to a halt. The overlap with PeopleSmart is the breathing threats and murder that is at the beginning of the passage. If you've ever done yoga, there's a great deal of emphasis on breathing in and breathing out. It essentially gets the oxygen moving and the blood flow moving in your body, so you're ready to do some of these poses. And very often the idea also of breathing, as we talked about last week with the breathing exercises at the beginning of the service, you know, breathing in, you know, God's presence, letting out the things that are distracting or keeping you from being aware of God's presence. You're breathing in, breathing out. Do it again this week, but this time talk about breathing in peace and breathing out love. It sounds a little touchy-feely and hippy-dippy, but it's a lot better than breathing in and breathing out threats and murder, which is what Saul was doing.
It's also what Anakin was doing. In a geeky moment here.
As an illustration.
As an illustration. In the Star Wars prequel, Episode 3, Anakin Skywalker goes over to the dark side by practicing a focus on negative emotions like anger and fear.
Mm-hmm. And it made him strong.
It made him very strong and powerful, but it also makes him evil. So that's not too cool. He thinks he's doing it for a good reason to save his wife's life, but in fact, spoiler, he ends up killing her by doing it.
And... Do not want! Yes.
Yes. And that's very much the same for Saul. He thinks that he is doing the righteousness of God by doing this, but
exactly.
It turns out, nope.
And Jesus says, let's use that energy for it in a different direction. Moving on to PeopleSmart, continuing on with that idea of breathing threats and murder, how do you breathe these things? And what does it mean that you are so immersed in them you can't help but breathe them? Are you generating it? Is it something in the atmosphere around you that is generating it and you can't help breathing it in? Is it like a smoking habit, something that you need? And can you think of people that you know or have heard about that breathe threats and murder? What's their motivation? What are they like to be around? And especially, is there any kind of an antidote?
We'll pray for them.
Indeed.
If nothing else.
Right.
For a special effect for PeopleSmart, we include drama here in PeopleSmart. And so we have a reader's theater of the full passage here from verse 1 to 20. And we've set that up for you as a PDF, so you can download that from our website or from the show notes and get that cast and have at it. Could be mm-hmm. fun.
Could be fun. For SelfSmart, we have an illustration and a special effect. Illustration, be just ask some questions. Why would Jesus use such a dramatic manner to get Saul's attention? Some people talk about God needing to hit them upside the head with a 2x4 in order to get their attention. So maybe ask the question, what does it take to get your attention? What would God need to do in order to get you to pay attention, either to change the path that you're on or to maybe amplify the path that you are on, which is, you know, one that you are need to be on, but maybe you're just kind of poking about a bit.
Yeah. So for a special effect with that, you might bring in a 2x4 or a baseball bat as a way of illustrating God's attention-getting devices.
Exactly. Or if you can think of ways that, you know, maybe aren't quite so dramatic or violent, you know, bring those in as well. Have fun with that one. Let's go on. The second reading for Year C, Easter 3, comes from the book of Revelation, chapter 5, verses 11 through 14. This is a continuation of John's introduction to his apocalypse, and he's looking and hearing and seeing many, many angels. Myriads, thousands, singing with full voice, a couple of songs that we'll talk about when we get to Music Smart. We have a lot in this particular passage. We have a special effect in Word Smart. We have illustration in iSmart and illustration in Math Smart. We have illustration and special effect in Body Smart, illustration in Music Smart, illustration and special effect in Nature Smart, illustration and special effect in People Smart. It's a lot, so let's get to it.
Okay, so starting with Word or verbal, there's a fellow named Eric Whitaker, and his one of the things that he does is invite people around the world to record music pieces of music and at their home studios. And then he takes them and compiles them so that he ends up with this internet choir, basically.
Thousands
of voices from around the world. And it's just beautiful music and remarkable in the way that it's put together, as none of the folks are ever together in the same place. Mm-hmm. So it gives that sense maybe of thousands and thousands of singing souls in a different kind of ethereal setting. It's not particularly verbal, but we include it here because of the auditory nature, and it also fits in with Music Smart. So we'll mention it again there. But the particular link that we have is to one of his pieces called Lux Aurumque, and it's an internet choir, and we've got a link to a YouTube video for you there that you can listen to, play, show in your worship.
For iSmart, we have an illustration. We looked at the Greek word for looked, which is horao, and that is translated not only as look or see, but experience. John didn't just see these visions. These were full-body experiences. He was immersed in what he was seeing, which got us to thinking about things that other people have done to try to immerse you into an experience so that there's a better understanding of it, and got to thinking about this old television series called You Are There that Walter Cronkite hosted. We have a couple of YouTube links that you can take a look at that. That might be something that you consider using.
Yeah, he would take great moments in history, particularly United States history, and they would reenact them with reporters reporting on it as if it were happening right then. Mm-hmm. It was very cool.
More modern technology, virtual reality. There are ways of immersing yourselves in stories that way. So we also have an illustration for MathSmart.
The passage refers to the word myriad, which in Greek is myriad, and translated as
fancy
myriad. So it means
myriad.
Myriad, yeah. 10,000, or perhaps just very many, an innumerable many.
We got tired of counting.
Yeah. And in the ancient world, they didn't go much above thousands in their counting system. So when you got beyond that, it's myriad, just a bunch. So that's one way of, so you can understand what they're saying there with myriad. But then connecting with that, and this kind of ties into people smart, perhaps, is to think about the largest number of people that you've ever worshipped with. And maybe it's just your own congregation, which might number in
couple hundred,
tens, hundreds, thousands. or perhaps you've been to a conference where there have been thousands of people, or some other setting where maybe more than that. But if we compare that with the largest crowds that happen for other events, like concerts or sporting events or political rallies or marches, political marches, mm-hmm. and things, you often get much larger crowds. And what would it be like to have all of those folks
focusing their attention,
yeah,
on one thing, which leads us into Body Smart, and we're looking at the phrase "the elders fell down and worshipped." For the illustration, ask the question: what's suggested by falling down? We're presuming bowing in worship. Remember, Revelation is written to faithful Jews who have a long history, and there's a lot of rich symbolism and texture in the book of Revelation for people who are immersed in the Old Testament. The Old Testament book of Daniel, Daniel does full body worship. He bows down three times a day to worship his God, which is what gets him in trouble with the advisors for King Darius.
Right. And there's a lot of imagery from Daniel that transfers
into Revelation. Yes, absolutely. Also as an illustration, the Talmud states that in reciting the Tefillah, one should bow down at the appropriate places, and this is an interesting thing, until all the vertebrae in the spinal column are loosened. We have a link to that so you can look at it. But what would it be like to bow down, to be so mobile, so physical in your worship that your body loosens, that the joints are loosened, that you have some fluidity and freedom? So for a special effect, you can invite the board members of your church, your elders, to come forward and to kneel in prayer and offer the prayers for the people for the day. Suggest this to them early on. Give them a little bit of time to prepare for this, days before the service, so physically and spiritually they can get ready for it. Maybe some people might need to do some loosening and get their joints all fluid and ready to go. And if kneeling isn't going to work, I mean, if that's just physically beyond them or emotionally beyond them, at least have them offer the prayers.
For Music Smart, besides Eric Whitaker's pieces, you also will want to be in touch with Handel's Messiah, because
there it is, right there, there it is. The text.
The next to last piece of the Messiah gets worthy its text from, yeah, Worthy is the Lamb Who Was Slain, takes several of these songs and puts them together. You might also talk about the importance of singing in worship and the effect that it has on the worshiping community, on your own soul, and in families.
On the next generation.
Yeah, on the next generation. So I've seen somewhere, and I can't find the link for this, but I've seen somewhere that when dads in particular sing in worship, that their kids are more likely to stay connected with the church in later years, or come back to it anyway. So we've got a link to an article about dads singing. And then we also have a link from the Presbyterian USA Book of Order that talks about the role of music in worship that looked pretty cool. So we want to share that with you as well.
For Nature Smart, we have an illustration and a special effect. Based on that phrase, every creature, John saw every creature under heaven and in the earth and under the earth, all singing with one voice. It's more than the peaceable kingdom. This is the entirety of creation paying attention to one specific thing, Jesus' return, and all of them singing with all of their voice as one voice. So invite your people to imagine layering all the sounds of all the living creatures and all of creation until you hear all of them. A special effect you could do is to just open the windows in your sanctuary and just listen for a bit. If your sanctuary is positioned where my sanctuary is, you're right on a busy road, so you might hear a lot of traffic, but that's also a part of creation. And you might imagine, where are those people going? And you know, what sounds are surrounding them at this point in time? If you don't hear a lot of traffic, listen to nature and what sounds like praise. If that's not possible, we have a link to a YouTube clip of space sounds, which made us think of the verse from the hymn, "This is my Father's world. All nature sings and round me rings the music of the spheres," which is one of my favorite hymns.
For People Smart, an illustration here that we have is that as part of God's creation, we will also be singing on that day. And so engage your folks with the question, what would you sing to express your praise and joy? And as we often suggest, this might be an opportunity to invite your congregation into small group discussion, turn to somebody near them and talk about what they would want to sing and how they would want to sing it. Take the text of these two songs in the passage here and invite them to decide what sort of music they would set it to. And is that the kind of music that they usually listen to? And why or why not? Or is there some particular special kind of music that they need to set it to?
All right, let's go on.
The gospel lesson for the third week of Easter year C is John 21, verses 1 through 19. A long passage with lots of stuff in it. It is the appearance of Jesus on the beach at the Sea of Tiberias. And so we have seven disciples who have made their way back to Galilee, and they go fishing and don't catch anything. Jesus shows up in the morning and says, "No, cast your net on the other side," and they do, and they catch a huge chunk of fish and realize that it is in fact the Lord, and in they go to the beach where Jesus has breakfast for them. Yum. And that is pretty that would be so awesome,
wouldn't it? Cool? Yeah, Jesus makes breakfast cool. For him.
And then we have what's referred to as the restoration of Simon Peter, where Jesus asks him three times, "Do you love me? And take care of my sheep." So we have a lot of stuff for you here. We have iSmart illustration, and special effect. We have math illustration, body illustration, and special effect. Nature Smart illustration, people both, and self special effect. So Molly's got iSmart for us.
Yeah, and the thing that caught me, my attention for iSmart, is the charcoal fire on the beach. And we have a couple of links of charcoal fires and the charcoal fire on the beach in the show notes, so you can go take a look at that. But to me, after working all night out on the water, laboring, let's get these fish, and nothing's happening. And then that big catch where they really had to work hard to get all of that in, they come to the beach And there's Jesus with a charcoal fire. It's kind of like coming to a campsite, you know, being out on a hike or going out someplace. And you come to a campsite and someone's got food ready. It's kind of, to me, it feels like a sense of coming home. Wow, thanks. That's tremendous. That, we really appreciate that. Also, for an illustration for iSmart, go back to John chapter 18, verses 15 through 18. And there's a charcoal fire that's burning there in the courtyard that the slaves and the police had made because it was cold and they're warming themselves up. And that's where Peter denies Jesus three times.
So it's kind of the opposite exactly. image of the coming home. It's coming back to...
Whoops, that was that time.
Awkward.
Awkward, right. So what you could do for a special effect, we've got a couple things here that could be really fun. But the one, you know, that's that simple is just project some pictures of charcoal fires. You could use that the PDF that I provided for you in the show notes. Do that as the passage is read, or just have it up there at the beginning of the service as kind of setting the stage for the whole story. Another thing you could do is bring in a hibachi or a charcoal grill and have a charcoal fire actually in the worship space. Make some s'mores for fellowship time afterwards. If your insurance policy says no open flame, no smoldering fires, then, you know, just have it there as an example. It's just a visual thing. Or, and make the s'mores in the microwave.
Yeah. Or take it outside and make them outside.
Ooh, yeah. S'mores.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Moving on to MathSmart, we have the reference here to 153 large fish, which is an oddly specific number.
And, how many fish did you catch today?
153.
Okay.
154th got away. And
dang it.
Because they always do. Anyway, people have tried to figure out why 153, and maybe it was just actually how many they caught. There are folks who try to figure it out symbolically and numerologically and whatnot all. So we have a link to an article that gets into a couple theories about why 153. And we'll just leave it with that. You can take a look at it if you want to. And so let's go on to body.
Okay. We're looking specifically at Simon Peter being in the boat stark naked while he was fishing, and then they figure out it's Jesus on the shore, and so he puts on his clothes before he jumps into the water. And David was wondering if it was significant that he needs to clothe himself before coming to see Jesus. It's not like the fig leaf of Adam and Eve in the garden, but maybe Peter is like putting on his clothes to hide his existential shame of what he had done. The last time he was around a charcoal fire. You know, you got to have to wonder about that. If he didn't worry about the lads in the boat seeing him in his all together, why did he need to feel the need to put on his clothes to go see Jesus? And when he jumped into the water, did he head toward shore? Or did he just jump in the water to hide? Interesting questions. So for a special effect for Body Smart, encourage everyone in your congregation to look down at what they're wearing today. Ask them to actually touch the fabric of their clothes and notice how it feels, both on their fingertips and where it's touching them on their skin. Ask them if they gave much thought to what they put on that day, or if they just consider their clothes to be something that has to be worn, you know, because there are laws. Or if they think that what the clothes they choose to wear to worship show the kind of person they are, or maybe show the attitude of, you know, putting on their Sunday best. That used to be a big thing. I remember as a kid putting on really uncomfortable dresses and shoes.
Mm-hmm. And because ties and jackets on our side, yeah.
For you, not me.
Yeah.
But it was expected. Now, not so much. It's kind of an open policy for wearing clothes. But people do seem to make an effort. So have them just look at their clothes and consider, you know, why that? Why that particular thing today?
For Nature Smart, going back to those fish, we have a couple links to for you to take a look at that reflect on what kind of fish those might be. There are a number of different species of fish in the Sea of Galilee. Three in particular that are primarily important to the fishing industry there. And so it gives some sense of what they might be. And it's perhaps since they're large fish, there's a likelihood of them being biny, B-I-N-Y, or they're also called barbels, which is a kind of carp, which is a couple feet long, 2 to 3 feet long.
Big
and
fish.
Big old fish.
Which would explain the struggle of getting 153 of those in. Yeah.
Indeed. And they were apparently popular for Sabbath dinners and feasts. Mm-hmm. So that would be an important symbolic connection, I think. So anyway, there's some pictures there of what they look like and some fishermen catching them and stuff. So that's kind of cool.
For people smart, we're going with the knowing in this particular passage. And there's two different places where that shows up. The first is at the beginning of the passage where the disciples didn't know that was Jesus. And then there's this catch and, hey, suddenly they know who he is. And then also the word know that Peter uses in his conversation with Jesus, the three times that Jesus asks him if he loves him. And we'll get to that in a little bit, too. But the an illustration that you might raise with your people for people smart is the disciples seem to come to the realization, they figure out, they know who Jesus is, once they make this huge catch. Prior to that, Jesus is just some guy on the beach who's offering advice, and they have no idea it was him. But then this big haul that they have seems to open up their eyes as to who that is. Why do you suppose that is? What was the significance of all of these fish? Hey, it's the Lord. And then that's when Peter gets dressed and jumps in the water. John is also, in his entire gospel, all about people knowing who Jesus is. And because they know who Jesus is, they come to trust that.
Yeah, actually, in the end of last week's reading in the gospel, it says that Jesus did many more things. These are written so you might know
him and come to believe. Yeah. Right. And we often think of the word believe in the gospel of John as trust.
Right.
Because it's more than just, you know, an intellectual assent to some thoughts and facts and things. It's your whole being involved in it. So a special effect for people smart would be to ask the question, who have you come to know Jesus to be in your own walk of faith? How did it happen? Do you trust that person that you know Jesus to be enough to take his advice about your life? Hey, throw your net in on the other side of the boat this time.
And what would that mean for your life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What would that look like?
For self-smart, just a little bit to think about for Peter, or Simon, actually, in this section. The commentaries, again, suggest that this is Jesus' way of forgiving Peter for his three betrayals by asking him three times, do you love me?
Around a charcoal fire.
Yes. But there's a little more interplay than just, I forgive you, because...
The Greek.
Because of the Greek. So they're using different words. Jesus says, do you love me unconditionally? And Peter says, or Simon says, I love you like a brother.
Love you like a brother, man.
Yeah, man, I love you, man. And then that happens twice that way. And then the third time, Jesus says, well, do you really love me like a brother? Or, well, it just says, do you love me like a brother? And it grieves Peter. It says it hurts his feelings that Jesus asked him that, because he'd already said twice that was true. Yeah. So explore that a little bit. Why would that restoration hurt him? Why would it hurt him? And we were thinking maybe, you know, and this is a little body smart too, that maybe it's like lancing a boil or... pulling an impacted tooth.
Ooh, or an infected splinter.
Or something that is painful but leads to further healing, to removing something that isn't supposed to be.
You know,
there.
I never thought of it that way before. I always kind of figured it's just Peter but never really thought of it as being something that needed to be done in order to restore him completely.
Yeah.
Cool. That's it for today's podcast. Please ask questions or leave us a comment on our website at www.morethanhearing.org or our Facebook page, facebook.com/morethanhearing, or give us a tweet at morethanhearing, or you can even email us at connect@morethanhearing.org. If you try any of these suggestions, or maybe you got an idea that you like even better than ours, please let us know what you did and how it went. We would really love to hear how using this theory has made a difference in your preaching and worship.
Be sure to look for the show notes, links, and resources on our website. We publish our worksheets on each text, so you can see some of the ideas that don't make it into the podcast, too. They could be helpful or give you a spark. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast using the iTunes, Android, or RSS links at the bottom of the show notes, or point your podcatching software at morethanhearing.org/feed/podcast. You can find us on the iTunes store too. And if you like the show, why not leave us a good review? It'll help others find the show more easily. Or just recommend us to your friends and colleagues. We'll be back with another installment next week. So in the meantime, stay subscribed
and be smart.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
This is a Whippet Good production.